Of the city, this is 102.3 FM WHIVLP New Orleans, community radio dedicated to social justice, human rights, and ending.
Bicycle, I want to ride my bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my bicycle.
I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle.
I want to ride it where I like.
You say black,
I say white.
You say bark,
I say bite.
You say shark,
I say hey man.
Jaws was never my scene, and I don't like Star Wars.
Whoa, whoa,
God,
whoa,
you don't like
whoa.
Star Wars?
Oh, of course I like Star Wars. It's just part of the lyrics.
You say Rose,
I say Royce.
You say God,
give me a choice.
You say Lord,
I say Christ.
I don't believe in Peter Pan, Frankenstein, or Superman. All I wanna do is bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my bike.
I want to ride my bicycle.
Races are coming your way,
so forget all your duties, oh yeah.
Fat bottom girls, they'll be riding today,
so look out for those beauties, oh yeah.
On your marks, get set, go.
Yatta-da, yatta-da.
Kane.
You say John.
I say Wayne.
Hot dog.
I say cool it, man.
I don't want to be the president of America.
You say smile.
I say cheer.
Cartier.
I say please.
Income tax.
Jesus, I don't want to be a candidate for Vietnam or Watergate, because all I want to do is
bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
And you're listening to Outspoken here on WHIV 102.3 FM, live in New Orleans. We are in the studio tonight, and with we, I mean me, myself, and I, and Stephanie.
Hi.
Yeah, thank you so much. We met at this holiday celebration at Brad's house.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this may be a good stomping ground to get some people to come on the radio. So thank you so much for coming.
Absolutely. I remember someone saying, oh, well, you should meet this woman. She talks about bikes. I thought, right? Oh, well, that's good conversation for me.
Yes. And then we started kind of talking. I was like, no, leave it. So I have to say, I know nothing about you. I just learned you played accordion. That's the only thing I know. But and that
bikes
you're a commuter.
Yeah. Yes. I'm very into commuting.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to have a show. Well, I had an opportunity to have a show, and then I was like, well, let me talk then about bikes, right? I couldn't talk about myself, but a lot of times I do talk about myself, and most of the time I take the broad overpass, but today I drove it with the car because I injured myself, biking this time. I hurt myself last year biking when I went over the handlebars. I hurt myself roller skating.
Okay.
And
another rolling related accident.
Yes. Yeah. So last time when I went over, it kind of hurt my whole body, but mainly my shoulder.
Okay.
Yeah. And now it, you know, with rollers, I hurt my leg. So I've not been skating as much. So I decided, not because of the cold weather, but because of that, to take the car. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, like when I go to work, if I have an opportunity, at least three times a week, I'll commute. But tell me about...
That's Michael.
Yeah, so yeah. Are you commuting like quite a bit or...?
Well, I have a job in Metairie and I live in New Orleans. And so that's... It's a significant commute. It's not that far, but logistically it's a little tricky.
Yes. I worked in Metairie for a bit on Rosa Avenue. Okay. Like Metairie and Rosa, like right there where the Dorjonois, is it there? The grocery store.
Dornax
maybe like right there.
Kind of not too far.
Not
from
too
the,
far.
The canal.
Right.
Bridge,
and
yeah.
What I would do is I would take Palmetto and then get over into Old Metairie and then kind of go through the neighborhood and then take Rosa to get under the interstate.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That, I've dealt with Palmetto before, and that can be a little scary if people don't accommodate the bike. But then you get to go by the Longview House if you're going up that way. I'm lucky enough. I live in the 7th Ward. When I was in the Riverbend, I did something very similar to what you just described. But I get myself up to Metairie through City Park, up to Harrison Ave.
Yeah.
And that's actually most of it, like 90% of it is super pleasant. And then 10% of it's very stressful.
Like, what is stressful then?
Well, I think there is a little bit different car culture, even New Orleans to Metairie. We've got issues either way with how bikes are treated and perceived. But in New Orleans, I tend to find that people find them to be annoying sometimes, but they expect them to be there. In Metairie, I feel like they don't expect to see bicycles as much. So it's a different set of problems as far as biking defensively.
Right. Even in the in some of the back roads and stuff?
I have found that figuring out a good route with back roads has really made the difference. I work on Veterans Memorial Boulevard, which is just a big old road.
Yeah.
So I avoid that as much as I can. But you have to stitch things together.
Yeah.
I do, you know, walk across certain streets just to get myself around obstacles.
Right. And when you walk your bike, you're a pedestrian. And so the law of people need to stop for a pedestrian to cross the street will count for you when you're holding your bike in your hand.
Yeah, and people may be more accommodating. It's funny.
Yeah, it's weird how that... And sometimes I'm just, you know, I'm like, I can't cross. I'm like, okay, I'm getting off my bike. Now, people, I'm a pedestrian, you know, so watch out for me.
Absolutely, it's a funny thing.
Yeah, so I was thinking, right, like if there's an opportunity... Because how many miles do you go? Like, was it like 5 miles or something like that? Seven, maybe?
It's six and change there. So, you know, overall... 13-mile day. It's not huge, but...
doing that after, you know, and then if you do that on a regular basis and then coming home, and then life is happening and you have to go again, you know, that does kind of tires you out, you know, perhaps. Maybe not quite, but... do you... Because now I'm just kind of curious, right? Like, do you have... did you get to using an electric bike, or you're still on a regular...
No, I have just a... It's a hybrid, you know, meant for these kind of roads bike. Right. You know, so it's not super light, but it's sturdy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's decked out with, like, panniers, and, you know, I'm very happy and able to move things to and from.
Yeah. Do you see other cyclists on your way that you're there? Like, I drive...
Maybe one.
Yeah.
Maybe two. You know, in New Orleans, of course, there are more. And, of course, through City Park, there are many of them. I rarely see any once I get into Metairie.
Right. Yeah. So when I worked at this one clinic, I would take in my bike, and there was no bike parking whatever. But mm-hmm. people are like, oh, you can just park the bike in the gym.
Okay.
You know, I'm like, okay. I mean, if I would be the health inspector, I was like, what is this dirty bike doing in the gym? You know, but whatever.
Well, that's great.
I guess I didn't care.
Yeah.
But if I would have a nice bike, you know, I kind of do expect that. When you are parking, is there a place to park it outside of the sun the whole time and out of the elements?
I'm very lucky in that I actually bring it up the elevator into my office and it lives with me.
Yeah.
Some people might find it kind of weird. I know the business, you know, the manager of the building has told me many times that there are other places I could park it should it be more convenient. And I said, no, I'm happy to just bring it in my office.
Right.
I have had, because I do have, you know, I've built this little system that works really well for myself for commuting, which includes like a speaker. I don't blast music. I actually listen to audiobooks. I'm very nerdy. And, you know, I've got a little horn like that actually has a pretty loud like warning sound. Yeah, I've got all these little things on my bike that my bike has been stripped before when I parked it on the street.
Right.
So, you know, in the pannier. Yeah. So whenever I have the opportunity to just bring it in, I do.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like a purse too. I just have my lunch in there. I have all my little things.
Nice. Yeah. I would say recently, but it's not been that recent. I got out of work and grabbed my bike, and as soon as I hopped on, I'm like, something is wrong with the brakes.
Oh.
And then I'm looking at the brakes, and I don't know why I couldn't really figure out the problem, but I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to try and ride it to the bike shop around the corner.
Yeah.
When I got there, he was like, the reason why your brakes are not working is because you are missing the nuts on your tires.
Oh, and someone tried to. Yeah.
No, but they took one bolt on one side and one on the other wheel. So they didn't take both of them and to take it. So I really kind of felt it was like a bullying action.
Oh, gosh.
That, I mean,
that's like, dangerous.
It was dangerous, yeah. And so I'm lucky that, you know, things didn't go bad for me in those couple blocks getting there. But other than that, I've been very lucky. I do have a bike light now on the back that is hard to get off.
Yeah.
And so I don't really go through the trouble of taking it off. Mm-hmm. You have to like unclip it before you can get the strip out and stuff. But I've had it in the past where people will take the light and then leave the thing. And I'm like, why would you just steal this, right? And it's one of those opportunity things.
Sure.
But the best thing that I have now is that it's a light that when I am braking and I use it when I'm on like broad when I'm braking, it's like 300 lumens. So a lot of the little light bike lights are maybe like 40 lumens
not
or 30
bright,
lumens
yeah.
Maybe if you have a good light it's maybe 100 or 140 or something like that.
And so
this one says do not look directly into the light when you try it on.
It will blind you.
It's so bright, but it's almost like I would say it's probably as bright as a car's brake light. And so when I'm on the overpass at times, now you do have to brake to kind of change it, or you have to make a funny movement.
So it responds to
and
that.
And it still responds. So as soon as the bike like stops, the light is like, you know. And at times I have to say, I use it as an educational moment where I want to show some of the other people, you know.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah, I like it. I was like thing that I saw on the internet. I'm like, ooh, I want to try this. But I think there's even things where you can have like a light. Like, I think like people have lights on their helmet where you can maybe press something and like
it will
a brake light goes on. I'm not sure, but there's fancy things out there.
I mean, I do think the more visible you can be, the better.
Right.
I often ride with a reflective vest.
Okay.
If it's at all dusk or dark or, you know, overcast.
Right.
For that reason. But lights are even better.
Right. What I think the main problem is that when it's raining in New Orleans, people tend to park their bike on the neutral ground and at times maybe block the bike path.
Oh, I've had that.
And so it drives me crazy because you now have to ride on the street that people don't expect you to be on a good day. And so now... And now it's a bad day.
Yeah.
And now you're forced in an area where people maybe not even see you because of the weather, and they're surely not expecting you, you know?
Yeah. I have run into that before. What was it? Years ago, maybe it was 2016, 2017. There was a big flooding... local flooding event in New Orleans. It was rain related.
Right.
It wasn't a hurricane. It was like just there was a lot of rain and the pumping systems just did not meet the...
Yes, I think my car got flooded there.
I lost a car during that, but I was biking during it on...
right, same here.
Yeah, and everybody pulled up onto the bike path.
Yes,
and there was a foot of water. And I was knocking on the cars being like, look, if you just move over a foot, I can actually do what I'm trying to do and you can still be safe. But like, you've totally.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still here. Like, can you. and it was very difficult to get home that day.
Right.
Not. I mean, the bike path was dry. I would have been fine had people just been considerate enough not to cover it.
And we used to get from the city these messages to saying, right, you can use neutral parking or something like that. Yeah. And they would say. Like, in the message, they would add, you know, make sure that you are not blocking, like, the bike path or something like that.
Okay. And it doesn't say that now.
And I have not seen that messaging for quite some time. But I kind of, like, and I thought that was kind of, you know, different. Well, the city is all different. You know, let's see now what's going to happen. Maybe those messages will, you know, change a little bit.
Well, I mean, the enforcement of traffic and parking violations is a whole other thing that does closely... relate to the experience of biking in the city.
Right.
You know, and there's just not a lot of follow through on rules and guidelines.
Right. So what would you suggest that happens?
I think they need to start ticketing bike lane violations. I wish I had the stats on me, but I think it's less than a dozen last year that got ticketed. And they don't ticket at night, just as a policy. So, you know, and that's the time when people may be biking because it's, you know, if you're going out for drinks or whatever, you know, maybe it makes more sense to bike somewhere.
I am hoping in the future to be able to get some part-time hours and work as a meter maid and work at night.
I would think
that would be just a great job.
Yeah.
Definitely, if you maybe have some retirement money, because I don't know how much it's going to be paying as a job, but...
Probably not a ton. And I do know that there are dangers associated with it, because we're a very armed, upset population about our cars.
Right. But I agree with you that... And I'm not saying that we should necessarily ticket people blocking the bike lanes, or...
I say we should.
I'm thinking they... We should start at the beginning. Like, people already not even using blinkers. How many times are you trying to cross a street And you see a car coming. Oh. There's no blinker on. Yeah. So you're thinking, like, perfect. As soon as they pass, they can go over. And then when you kind of already started going, because you're anticipating mm-hmm. it, they slowing down because they are deciding to make a turn.
Well, and...
I think you should give those people tickets.
Well, and that's very dangerous for biking because this happens all the time to me. I know somebody is about to cut me off by turning right.
Right.
You know, they either don't see me, they're not communicating. I just have to guess if I see that weird little, you know, lane drift and slow down. Like, they're about...
Yeah.
They always... People underestimate how fast a bike is going.
Right.
You know, so I'm often putting on the brakes to keep from hitting somebody who's turned in front of me.
Right. And I used to kind of like tap people on the car.
Yeah.
But I have learned that that is considered assault.
I was in a situation once biking with somebody else and he tapped a car and the car chased us for over an hour.
Oh, wow.
Because people get really weird when their car is touched.
Yeah.
Like there's a kind of car culture that is kind of the car wins above all else.
Right.
So yeah, I'm very nervous about any kind of
engagement. I got pulled over because the people that I spit at, that thank God I missed.
Oh my gosh.
Were US Marshals, and they were so upset and they pulled me over and I was upset because in my eyes they had thrown something out of the window that just flew by me. So it was like a response to that. And they were like, why are you so upset? I'm like, you know, they're like, we didn't. I'm like, well, whatever. Something flew by my face.
Yeah, that's scary.
And then they were like, well, why would you even spit? And I'm like, I don't know. My mom told me that. And then they were like, you should tell your mother that that is considered assault.
Oh, gosh. But
yeah, like sometimes, right? Like what can you do? So I agree mm-hmm. with you that, you know, are we getting to the ticketed phase? Right. I understand that maybe a lot of people are not in an opportunity to pay those tickets. So then I'm saying, well, can we then, if it's not a revenue thing, can it be an educational moment to saying I'm stopping you because of this?
To actually get a conversation in.
To have a conversation. Yeah. That I would, you know, find mm-hmm. interesting. But
yeah, I mean, I'm all for that. I think it comes down to resources and priorities. And unfortunately, we're just not hitting those with biking. I mean, we've had excitement about it, but then there's been some rollback on the city's willingness and support for cyclists. You know, the rollback of bike lanes and pressure that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a way to go, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it used to be the 5 E's. Now, NHTSA, the National Highway Transportation Safety Committee or something like that, whatever association or agency.
Okay.
They do a bunch of education and... it used to be the 5 E's, if I can remember. Engineering, education. Okay, that's only two.
Okay, well, those two are good.
And so then there is there used to be equity, so they took that out because whatever that's called.
Yeah, that sounds like too close to some you know,
and
woke
then
agenda.
But the idea is that maybe we don't just necessarily give people... So enforcement would be the other one, right? So instead of just being enforcement, can it be more education?
Sure.
Engagement.
Well, and I do think just as a general life concept beyond biking, like if you want a certain system, you're not going to get there with a stick. Like you want to get there by building the infrastructure and the buy-in so that people care about supporting that vision.
But like I'm from the Netherlands, it's yes. a lot of engineering there,
sure,
but the amount of people dying again in traffic riding a bicycle is going up.
Oh, has it?
It has been. And it has a lot to do with the electric bike, so there's your
I will say I think I'd rather see an electric bike over a car on the road, but electric bikes and manual, I guess, whatever you call them, regular bikes, together can be quite dangerous.
Right.
Because of just the speed differential.
Right. And what they're realizing in the Netherlands is that when you are seeing a bike approaching, do you know if it's an e-bike? So if you're now guesstimating, you know, that you can still make your turn because they're still far away, and all of a sudden they're right on top
of
you.
They're a lot faster, right? Yeah,
and it is like two modes of traffic really kind of sharing the same path.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we're working on bike lanes. But I feel like the engineering is for what bikes used to be 10 years ago.
Right.
And we really should be engineering what is coming in 10 years.
Well, and I think
or what
is,
we are now and what we're developing into.
Right, because we've gone from a kind of, you know, three-tier system where you've got walking, regular bikes, and driving. And, like, there's really a fourth element, which is, you know, the electric vehicles where you're still more vulnerable than, like, a moving car. But
right.
maybe you can drive almost as fast as that
right.
traffic.
Right. So this morning on the radio, there was some talk about, you know, I'm kind of thinking about, you know, some of those areas that you can address. And they were saying, when are we going to look at the vehicles, like motor vehicles, to saying, why do we need a car that can get up to 100 miles per hour in I don't know how many seconds if your traffic situation doesn't ask for you to drive more than 35 on Claiborne?
Yeah.
And, you know, can you make technology so that if you have these smart cars, so saying you are now driving in a neighborhood, your car automatically goes down and cannot go faster than 15 miles per hour?
Right. Well, that is an interesting thing with this new technology, is that it is programmed to adhere to traffic laws. And I find that, I mean, I find the technology scary and interesting.
Right.
Scary in that it's programmed to make certain choices that we don't want to admit we make when we drive, you know, in situations where you might have to decide what's the safer option or who's the least valuable person, you know, if you have to go one way or the other. But I do think it's interesting that it could force traffic to actually obey rules, because it's programmed to actually obey rules.
It's programmed, right? Like, you know, you can set that up, have a smart city where it's going to know, like, now you come in my neighborhood. But even, like, light, you know, like traffic lights. And the thing is that they take a lot of energy when they're like the smart stuff, and a lot of cities can't afford that.
Yeah.
But you have technology where the light can recognize that you as a cyclist is coming and turning all the other traffic to stop so that
you can
transition, because as a cyclist, you are in a higher risk for crashing with a car when you are starting up at the same time at the traffic light, because you may be wobbly.
Sure. And cars don't see. And this is where my biking habits have been formed to maximize my safety. And people who don't bike might see that as being, oh, you're being obnoxious. But I will get a head start on traffic from a stoplight.
Yeah.
Because it's safer.
Yeah.
You know, just from my experience, I can tell I get better clearance. I don't get people trying to cut right in front of me if I can get through that intersection first.
And so I agree that we have, like, similar laws that we have to adhere to. And I agree that we need to continue having those conversations and saying, like, why do we do that? But, you know, there's a place in town that I use a lot, and it has, like, this green bike box. But people don't know how to use it, so they're just, like, it's the green area. So if you have a lane where your bike lane extends,
oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And there's a green area.
Yeah, get up in there.
In front of the car, so that you can then take off before everybody else.
Yeah.
But I see a lot of times people park, you know, like, already standing in there. And I think that has to do with this, you know, I'm going to make a turn on red. And people are making turns on red even when it says a sign, do not take a turn on red. And those, again, are, that's where I would see, like, to have ticketing done. Because I think that if you have a driver's license, that is a governmental privilege for you to be able to participate on that mode, and you should have responsibility. And right now, people are willy-nilly driving. They're not using their turn signals.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I don't think people see it as a privilege extended by the government. They see it as a right.
Right.
And I think that's problematic.
Yeah.
Because we're all on the road together, you know, and this kind of individual entitlement, it creates a lot of problems. You know, I definitely have been in the situation where people, drivers, you know, they get frustrated if they do want to turn, if I'm in the way. I try to get out ahead enough, you know, if I'm able to safely, I will make space for people to turn right. You know, if I can maneuver, you know, I do have that in mind. It's not always possible.
Right. But, you know, some of the, you know, facilities that have been placed is where you do have a turning lane and then there's a bike lane and then it's the, you know, but then I see cyclists still being in the right turning lane and I'm like, well, why don't you see that there's a bike lane? So it kind of goes by both ways. But Stephanie, we have so much more to talk about. I'm going to take this hot second because WHIV is supported in part by Offbeat magazine at offbeat.com. And I wanted to share the band beat for today. It's Tuesday, January 13th already. And every time I'm here, I say it's already this date. It's already going so fast. Thank God it's not a Friday, the 13th. I don't know if we have any of those this year. We don't need any of those. But yeah, if you head out now, you can catch Denny Barker tribute with the Detroit Brooks. They're at Snug Harbor Jazz Bistro starting at 7:30. While the River City Jazz Masters hosting John Pizzarelli and Catherine Russell at the Marini and the Manship Theater, the Shaw Center for the Arts, also at 7:30. Then at 8 o'clock, Double Bird featuring Peter Harris, Julian Lee, Seth Finch, and Peter Vernado are at the Barrio Bar at the Punch Train Hotel. Joe Lasty's New Orleans Sound featuring Greg Stafford can be found at the Mahogany Jazz Hall at 8, while Fritzl's Arsenal Band with Jamil Sharif is at the Fritzl's European Jazz Club at 8. Now at 9:30, Denny Barker is going to continue with the, or that's the Denny Barker tribute is happening with the Detroit Brooks. It's going to continue at Snug Harbor, while and then the Double Bird with Peter Harris and Julian Lee and Seth Finch and Peter Vernado is going to continue at the Punch Train Hotel at 10 o'clock. Then also 10 o'clock, Vaughn's Lounge is hosting Little Prince and the Youngbloods. That, my friends, was your band beat for tonight. More information, including content, original videos, and photos, can be found at offbeat.com. So, yeah, you're listening to Outspoken. Thank you so much for that. I'm your host. My name is Yannicka. I got Stephanie here as my guest. I figured out I want to see more butts on bikes.
Yay.
And it's kind of good to see that there are so many more people on bikes. I always think that, you know, like if you have a body of water, if you have good pH levels and kind of, you know, good quality of water, you can find seahorses. And so I've seen seahorses in the Gulf of Mexico. And
oh, my
gosh. It was very lovely to see those. Right? And so I think that women are the seahorses in traffic. If you see women on bikes, I think it's an indicator that maybe the traffic situation is somewhat favorable for all users, right? And and what you're saying is that you're the lone seahorse in Metairie. You know, how can we get some more people?
Hopefully, though, I do think just by being out and doing it, you show people it can be done, that it's possible. So that's a start.
Right.
Just the visibility of people do bike here is a start.
And so New Orleans, and so maybe not so much Metairie, because Metairie, you know, only kind of popped up with White Flight, I'm assuming, with some little, some little town maybe a while back.
It wasn't drained all that long ago. I mean, Metairie and Kenner, that's why everything's newer there. It
was right.
Swamp while, for much longer.
While New Orleans, you know, is much older city, and traditionally, New Orleans is a very bike city, right? You have paved streets here because of cyclists trying to promote space, right? We have a path on the levee because of the Disabilities Act, where veterans, wheelchair users should be able to have access to see the river.
Oh, interesting.
You know, and so a lot of these developments have not been because of people driving, but a lot of the roads were built so long ago, not for all these heavy-duty traffic. And so you have a lot of heavy-duty traffic that are destroying everything. I mean, the potholes are ridiculous.
Sure. And you're right that these streets, especially if you get into the quarter, I mean, they're way older than, you know, they were not built to expect car traffic.
Right.
I would love to predominantly see them as pedestrian ways.
Right.
You know, that's a whole other policy question.
Right.
There are a lot of, I mean, and you get outside of New Orleans and then you see larger streets. That's been part of my struggle in trying to expand my range is, of course, once you get out into Metairie and Kenner, you really have to know, well, this is a car street. You know, I'm not accounted for here. There's been no allowance for bicycling here.
Right. So what do you do? Do you, like, you know, are you feeling comfortable taking your presence on the road and act like a car, or do you find yourself...
It depends. Like, one of the tricky bits can be getting, like, so for example, New Orleans to Metairie, if I'm taking Harrison Ave and then I come down and I need to take Veterans, there's a little canal there. There is a little walkway that you can take. There's been some construction there. It's been very difficult to find any kind of route. It's gotten a little bit better, but historically I have, you know, been in that road and I take a lane if I need it. If I ever think it's not safe for somebody to try to pass me within a lane, I take it. I try to blow through it as fast as I can and then move back to where people could safely pass me once I'm clear of something.
Right. So do you find that, like, you need to give, like, state law says you need to give 3 feet to a cyclist when you pass them by?
Yeah.
Do you find that people in Metairie adhere to that? Like, I'm such a cyclist where I take the road, and because I take the road and act like I am a vehicle, I find that people are fairly respectful and giving me the space.
Yeah.
But again, right, this is a city where people are maybe more familiar, and so I was wondering how that is interesting. There.
I wouldn't say that I necessarily experience better behavior in New Orleans than Metairie. I've generally found that people do give me clearance, but they tend to mirror the clearance I give myself. So if I'm tucked way to the side of the road, they're going to pass me really tightly.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, because you don't look like you're part of it.
Yeah. And so I am a little more aggressive, especially, you know, if I'm towards the side of the road, but they're parked cars, I get myself out early enough so that I'm not fighting to be in traffic. I just want to be in traffic. You know, as far as I'm part of the traffic. So that's my strategy. You know, I don't try to flex that unnecessarily. Like, if the road can accommodate me plus a full lane, you know, of car traffic,
you know,
I'll use that space. But there are a lot of times, you know, even in the bike lanes themselves, people park in the bike lanes all the time. This is New Orleans.
Right, people do park in the bike lanes quite a lot.
And the bike lanes, I mean, you bike on Broad, you must know there's a lot of sand and debris that can be in those lanes going over the overpass. Like, at the bottom, it's, like, kind of nasty sometimes. So, like, you can't always actually be in the bike lane safely.
Right. Now, I have this in my phone under bike lane blocker. There's a phone number, 504-658-8100, that you can call. You might be able to text them to let people know. So that's the number.
Is that different than parking enforcement?
Like the 311? No, that might be the same number. Or I have both of those in my phone. So I think I have them on the same one, but I think they might be related because it's still be part of DPW.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth calling at least for some sort of auditing of the issue. Generally, my experience is that they don't come out and check it. My partner is actually a little more militant about making calls than me, and he's actually kind of...
Yes, it's the same number.
Seeing if people... They say, okay, we'll send someone out, and then they never do.
Right, but what you're saying, right, like, because I call people about blocking the sidewalk, right?
They will get you on that. If you're blocking a driveway, man, they'll come out fast.
Well, I have called, and I'm not really seeing so much of a response.
Oh, you're not seeing a difference?
And I don't know if it's because I'm then calling at night.
Well, I do know at night it is different, and I have heard that the city is just, they're underfunded, but they're also scared. They sometimes do not want to issue tickets unless somebody's there with a gun to protect them, like police kind of with them.
Right.
Because they, I imagine that there's probably some truth to that.
Like, right.
They, not that it excuses right. not enforcing.
So anybody listening, they're going to be like, oh, gosh, like riding a bike is terrible, but that is not the case. So what I want to do is I want to play some music, and then let's come back and then talk about how great things are and some of the problems that we encounter with people blocking, that there's also lots of good positive stuff out there. So let's do that. You're listening to Outspoken here on WHIV. We are community radio with programming dedicated to human rights and social justice, y'all. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to play Nora Jane Struthers with this song, Bike Ride. You might know it. And we'll be right back, y'all, with more Outspoken.
Going on a bike ride, sidewalk on my right side. I could go anywhere. Going on a bike ride, nothing but the sunshine. I could go anywhere. Such a long time, I'm going on a bike ride. Ooh, somehow I thought I lost my wings, but I feel them now as my handlebar bell sings. What a simple thing. Sunshine, I could go anywhere. It's been such a long time. I'm going on a bike ride. Years ago, I'd find the shortest way. Just enjoy the day. I'll get there either way.
you're listening to Outspoken here on WHIV, radio programming dedicated to human rights and social justice. And that was Nora Jane Strudders with her song Bike Ride. And earlier I played the Lounge Kitten song Bicycle Race, original done by Queen. But it was featured, featuring the heavy metal Truants. I can't wait to get some future bike song here.
Nice.
By you, Miss Stephanie.
All right.
We want to get more people on bikes.
Yes.
And I do think, right, we were kind of hung up on some of the things that don't go well and how can we address those. And I do think that there's a lot of people that are driving. They maybe look at, if they had to go to a destination, mm-hmm. would they think that they would take the same route as if they are driving, versus seeing that the route and the experience that you have is totally different
sure.
when you are on the bike.
Well, and that's my experience commuting to work, that it's a treat for me to ride the bike. I go through City Park. I, you know, see some very beautiful little gardens and houses and have a nice sensory experience. If I drive, I hop on 610 and take the highway, and then I'm in traffic for a while.
Right.
And then I'm there. And it's like, it's not a positive sensory experience
right.
at all.
You need to kind of even unwind a little bit by the time you get to the job site.
Yeah. Well, as cranky as I get talking about parking enforcement and stuff for biking, I'm a crankier person if I'm driving a car.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
Like, I think that there is a lot of joy in finding a nice route and being on that route multiple times and seeing seasons change and seeing houses change and giving right. a little wave to the kid at the bus stop every
yeah.
time, because that's just like the timing of it.
Right.
Those kind of little moments are really lovely. And it is one of the reasons I like to commute. I'm also just not a morning person, so having that extra little bit of exhilaration really helps me start a day.
Right.
Right.
So how did you got, because, I mean, like you say, 6 miles to
yeah.
work, 6 miles back.
Yeah.
That's a big commitment. How did you, is that something that you did on a different place or for like littler
I think
routes,
that's,
or your
I
parents
think,
did
that's
that?
Funny.
Or?
I think that's why I'm saying, like, oh, it's not much. When I lived in, I'm from Maine. Originally, and I was a year-round bike commuter there with about a 20-mile radius.
Wow.
Because I was a tutor.
Okay.
And so I'd have textbooks and be biking up mountains in the snow.
Wow.
So now I'm like, oh, yeah, I go a little bit, you know, to Metairie and back, and it's, you know, no big deal. But, like,
okay,
that was an interesting time.
So that sounds terrible, but I bet it was not as humid.
I actually loved it.
I bet it was not so humid as it was here, maybe, because I think I cannot imagine that it's going to be that cold in the snow, where this cold is not going to sit on your bones
like it does
here. It doesn't
chill you to the bones in the same way.
Yeah.
And you just have the right gear. Like,
yeah.
I just
yeah,
had these
sure.
beautiful big puffy mittens, you know, with a trigger finger that I could kind of still do what I needed to do. And you just learn to layer.
Right, layer is really the thing. And this is,
yeah.
like, if people listening, you know, it's kind of cold and then it's kind of hot. I got in the car today, and it's funny because I dressed like I was sitting on the bicycle. I'm like, okay, maybe I got too many layers on here.
right.
But if you're dressing up and you are warm before you get on the bicycle,
ooh.
You are going to be too hot
yeah.
and sweaty, and you really want to avoid that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I found even in Maine, if I had a shell and I have like a nice thin cap that fits under my helmet and good glove, like keep the hands and feet warm.
Yeah.
Everything else will be more or less okay once you're moving.
Right.
You know, if you have a wind
right.
resistant shell.
Yes.
So that was really mostly what I did. It doesn't even look that different than what I do here, except the gloves are just like a little more, you know, manageable.
Yes.
And then rain is a different thing. I'd never had to account for rain so much.
In Maine?
In Maine.
It doesn't rain there so much?
Well, it does, but not in that kind of, like, sudden downpour.
Oh.
You know, so...
So if it's, like, raining, you can just kind of wait it out, or it's just not that heavy. Like, in the Netherlands, you have rain, but, you know, you have, like... plastic pants, mm-hmm. you know, this rain gear.
Yeah.
But here, if you wear rain gear in the summer, you're going to be as wet.
You just sweat through it.
Yeah. That's not helping you anything. And the heat is going to eat it up in seconds.
I think that is a thing. So, like, I think in Maine, yes, it does rain, but you can look at the weather for the day and kind of have a better percent, plan. Like...
Right.
You know, more confidence in what the forecast really is. But here, like, I keep, especially if I'm biking to work or something like that, I keep rain pants, like, not super plasticky ones, but at least water resistant ones in a little bundle that are in the pannier,
right?
You know, just to pull them out if I need to. There was one time I got totally rained on, and I showed up at the office, my shoes were all squishy and awful, and I was in the women's bathroom just, like, trying to stuff paper towels in and dry them out. And this woman saw me do that, and she's like, do you need an extra pair of shoes for the day?
You're like, yes, please.
I was lucky enough, someone actually lent me, like, some dry, flat shoes, because it would have been miserable.
Right.
So now I know at least to, like, keep some extra stuff in the office in case I really get... you know, pounded with rain. And then that's kind of the plan.
Yeah, like, or bring your dry clothes.
Exactly.
And then change it out.
Just have them ready.
Yeah.
Because here it's impossible to stay totally dry. Because, if you are wearing really waterproof stuff.
Right.
And it's hot.
So I've seen, I'm not really sure what they're called. Maybe like thighs or something. But it's like it's a rain pant.
Okay.
That is only covering your thighs.
Oh, interesting.
Because when you're riding in the rain, do you really need to cover the back of your legs?
That's funny. It's kind of like riding chaps or something?
Is yes, that the right word? Yes, I'm not really sure. I like the concept of riding chaps, but I'm not really sure what they're called.
Yeah.
Well, and I was like, oh, and then I was like, well, why don't I take some old pants and make this myself? Like, well, you know,
it's an interesting idea. I haven't seen that myself.
You're right. And there's now also these ponchos that you can have over the handlebars and they cover, but I think they might take too much wind.
Yeah, like here it gets windy.
And it kind of, you become like a flag or...
yeah.
So I'm not really sure. Yes, I'm not really sure. So if anybody's listening and they're like, oh, yes, I have those, and you want to, you know, give a review, then please get in touch with me.
Yeah.
You know, maybe where to find me. If not, just email the radio station. We're probably info@whivfm.org, I bet. Yes.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. Something like that. But
I do think just, you know, a ride is a lot more comfortable if you have a plan and you have gear. You know, and that as far as talking about getting butts on bikes, there is a little bit of a financial threshold to have that kind of stuff too. Where if you really just hop on a bike and go somewhere, you might get rained on, you might get wet, you know.
Right, but then I love the fact that you do have, okay, maybe there's not that many ton of bus routes, but the buses are equipped.
Yeah, you can throw a bike
that
on
you
there.
Can put a bike. Well, there's only space for two, so if it's already taken, then you know, you gotta wait. But what I was thinking the other day, and I ended up walking to the bus stop with my sore leg, and I'm like, man, I could have rode a little bit to the bus stop, but there's not a good place to park a bike. And I would like to see some of the hubs to have some good parking.
Yes.
So that we can maybe bike to a place, then hop on the bus, and then maybe do your last mile, you know, to your work site.
Well, I had, not super frequently, but I had biked to the old airport a few times before they rebuilt it and it moved north.
Right.
And there was parking.
Oh, really?
Because some of the employees would bike in and park. And so I had successfully, you know, taken the river trail, which is super pleasant, you know, cut north in Kenner for a little bit and a little bit of traffic, and then parked at the airport, and they had infrastructure there for it. I cannot figure out any sane way to do that now.
At this the new airport is it's difficult to navigate. Like, I'm not really even sure how to get there from airline altogether.
I don't really understand it either, because it's all kind of bigger highway systems that feed it. Or you're coming from... Yeah, I would love to know if anyone has done that. I don't get the sense that it's safe or possible. I would love to be told I'm wrong. But I could do it at the old one. And, you know, it wasn't always practical, especially if you're, like, traveling with any kind of luggage. But I just, I like, for me,
right,
I feel more comfortable. I always like to know if I can bike somewhere. Like, I would never work somewhere I can't bike to.
Right.
You know, or at least I've been lucky enough to always have, you know, I like knowing what my radius can be, whether or not I exercise it all the time. So, yeah, now I don't think I can get
The League of American Cyclists has, like, some programming where it's, like, a bike-friendly business or bike-friendly school or bike-friendly university and bike-friendly cities. And so maybe they could have the bike-friendly airports, and we can – so that when they're building an airport, whoever wants the airport – you know, can say, like, listen, we do want facilities where people can lock up their bike and while they travel, or, you know,
and
not necessarily for people visiting, but, you know, if you're a bike friendly business, it's like the people that are working on the business. Do you, what is your engagement in making sure that the infrastructure around your business is bike friendly? Do you have showers for your staff? Do you have lockers for people? You know, there's a lots of stuff that I guess we can keep going. And so, unlike the place that you are working, you're saying, you know, you're bringing your bike into the office.
And they're good with that.
And so they're good with that,
and that
right?
goes a long way for me, actually. If they weren't, I wouldn't feel the same about being there.
Right. Like,
it's funny.
You know, would they consider, you know, doing some change and say, like, oh, we get, like, bigger lockers, or we're going to put in a shower.
Way to accommodate. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then additionally, you know, bike-friendly business, can we get maybe a benefit from work to saying, you know, you can lease a bike?
Or, that'd be cool.
You know, every year or every 5 years, you're going to get, like, a stipend to get yourself a new bike. Mm-hmm. You know, like, some companies are paying people, you know, certain money per mile that they travel to go to work, and you get that money back, you know. And if you live, whatever, 40 miles away, you're like, oh, this is kind of nice. But let's say you're biking, you know, a good distance, you should get that money, you know, as well, so you can have a, you know, you get more promoted to maybe using biking.
Well, and there are workplace incentives just for health and well-being generally, and I would think that cycling also fits into that program quite well. I personally don't benefit from anything like that. I just, you know, enjoy my commute, luckily.
I know, but maybe, right, like, because as a cyclist, if you have 100 people in your company, I mean, whatever big company you are, like, if a bunch of people are biking, then they don't have to provide extra parking maybe for the customers.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm pretty sure I'm the only one.
Right. Well, now. right now.
It's so sweet. People offer me rides all the time because they just don't really understand, you know, what I'm doing.
Oh, I have that when it's raining, where people are like, oh, let me give you a ride back. I'm like, well, what shall I do with the bike? And they're like, oh, yeah. Or I'm like, no, I just ride. And I never really think it's all that terrible.
If I'm going home, I don't care. You know, it's just when I'm going somewhere and I know I need to be there for a while that I don't want to get
soggy. My main problem is that, you know, if you have to haul a computer or something, then I am a little bit concerned. But, you know, the it's lighter out again.
It's getting better, yeah.
Right, Mardi Gras is around the corner. It's going to be done in no time.
Yeah.
You know, before you, then we have a little bit of local awesome stuff happening before you get, like, Jazz Fest, and you get lots of people biking, and then it will get a hot where people are like, no, I'm not going to be biking anymore. But I do think, you know, this time of the year, it's important for people to bike as much as they can to really get that awareness going.
Sure. Well, we've just had some really beautiful days. It got a little cooler this week, but it's been gorgeous out for biking.
Gorgeous out. Yeah. I was riding in shorts the other day. So Stephanie, the time flew. Look, we got a few minutes before 8.
Oh my gosh.
Pearl's already in the studio. We got the Blues Crusade coming up, y'all. So I hope you're going to stay tuned. I'm going to say, please come back another time, because I bet we have so much more to talk about.
Scratch the surface.
And this was really lovely. What I'm going to do is I'm going to play this bicycle song called Bicycle by RM. It's Jill's favorite. And I'm going to leave it at that, y'all. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Good night, everybody. This was Outspoken, a show about all aspects of cycling here on WHIV LP New Orleans. See you next week.
That's it. Leave it there.
Leave it there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Great.
Gotta be the Blues Crusade with Pearl. Right there on WHIV 102.3 FM New Orleans. You never know what she might be playing. She's so cool.
Yeah.
WHIV, we are not a radio station with a mission. We are a mission with a radio station.
Hey, good evening and welcome. It's